Imagine a pill that can improve your focus, your memory, your sleep. A catalyst to improve your brain chemistry. Dr. Bill's Cognition Plus is truly the smarter in an hour pill. A combination of amino acids, trace minerals, and B vitamins, Cognition Plus is made with specialized herbal extracts that will enhance and support brain function. Our customers say,
I feel more focused.
My memory's getting better.
I can work longer with more useful hours.
Power up your neurotransmitters that have been depleted, like dopamine and norepinephrine. Stimulate the release of others, like serotonin and oxytocin. Improve circulation and energy production. Protect your mind and your loved ones today. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Cognition Plus at 888-212-8871 or go online to NutriMedical.com. That's 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. And listen to the NutriMedical Report on the Genesis Radio Network with open lines every weekday. NutriMedical.com, bringing nutrition and medicine together.
This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNLive.com today.
And welcome back to the NutriMedical Report. We have Harley Schlanger here from the LaRouche Foundation. And, of course, Harley, you always have some really good insights and wisdom to convey about the idea of always negotiations and collaboration and dialogue to settle the difference between left, right, or whatever side we have. You often they want to do a left, right side, but really it's much more than that, isn't it? It's a multi-part, many moving parts kind of thing, like even trade negotiations. Trump is going up to Canada. He wants to work out a deal. He wants the Canadians to reduce the 300% tariff against American dairy. But he doesn't want to harm Canada. They're an ally. But he wants to have a level playing field. He's a free trader. That's why he's negotiating with ZTE in China so that the telecom company won't be collapsed. It's going to get hit with a $1 billion fine, but it's also going to change its board, and it's going to have an embedded series of people to investigate, make sure things don't bad happen again. I guarantee you that people like Mr. Ma, who is the alternative to Amazon over in China, knows that to get 15 million jobs in China, he has to make 2 million jobs in America. People just have to start understanding this, that negotiations and dialogue are always better than fighting words and war, right?
Well, let me just start by telling you about the article I just wrote on how there's a bipartisan coalition to sabotage the Korean summit. And this is, it's an interesting story. It's partly what you were just saying about the complexity, because you have people who don't want peace. They don't want agreements. And right. So they start by saying that you can't negotiate with someone like Kim because he's a killer, he's a dictator, he's a liar. Well, it's also possible that he decided that he's got to change the way he's doing something.
Right.
And real Christians actually believe in forgiveness and change.
Right.
And we don't know whether Kim is going to change or not, but you give him the option to either, if he wants to go to war, it's a disaster for his country. If he wants to continue to spend all the money building nuclear weapons, he's going to have a rebellion eventually in his population. But if you offer him something that gives him an alternative, then maybe he'll move. So what's interesting?
You've laid it all out. The alternative. The alternatives. Let's make you, Kim, a billionaire, in now radically changed empire where people have a full belly without parasites. New industries coming in from all over the world, especially America and South Korea, that basically Koreanized North Korea, so it has great food, great tourism, fantastic people. The Korean people are great people if they're put in the proper environment. Just look at the same genetic people in South Korea. Some of the best Christians, the best patriots, the best technology developers, and the most intense people on the planet. And if we could do that for the North Koreans, everybody, including Kim, would thank us. We just have to take off the table of War Crimes Tribunal and deal with past sins and say, let's move toward forgiveness, reconciliation, and plans. And we also have to make sure that the Chinese want to tie it to North Korea. But to be honest with you, it's not to their advantage to have a weaponized North Korea that may, in fact, even target Chinese cities if some kind of conflict happens in the future. So the idea of having a weaponized maniac with actual advanced weapons is not a good idea. And I don't think Kim is like his father and grandfather. I think he's much more westernized, having been raised in Switzerland. And I think that he realizes it's the end of the road. Either you make a deal now, or you're going to be ostracized, you're going to have economic chaos, and you could have a military strike that will decapitate your government. And it wouldn't matter even if they get rid of Kim and the military takes over. If there's no deal, it's down a very dark road, isn't it?
Well, here's the point. Trump had a problem from within, Bolton and Pence making stupid statements about the Libya model. And the North Koreans pulled back because of that.
No wonder. They have a clue. They're human beings. They're normal. They're not stupid. Right?
Well, and Trump responded to them by saying, I'm canceling the summit. We don't like this language. I'm sorry to do it because we did have an opportunity to make a change. So he was somewhat conciliatory. The North Koreans picked up on that. Now, here's what's interesting. People like Chuck Schumer and Marco Rubio praised Trump for canceling the summit because they said, you can't make a deal. It won't work. Trump's not competent. Schumer said Trump doesn't know what he's doing. John Brennan said that Kim Jong-un is duping Trump. They have all this anti-Trump stuff coming out. So then Trump turns around, gets the former spy master of North Korea to come visit him. They talk, and the summit's back on. Now, okay. There's a deafening silence for a couple of days from this anti-Trump crowd. And then what do they do?
Yeah.
Well, Schumer and six other Democrats wrote a letter to Trump saying that we will not allow any deal to go through the Senate unless it's full denuclearization, full control from the outside of their weapons and so on. Now, here's the irony. These are people who, a year ago, were attacking Trump by saying that by being tough on North Korea, he's risking nuclear war. Now Trump's negotiating. He's got the Koreans and himself in a position where you might get a deal. And what are they saying? No, you've got to hold a gun to their heads. So
this is what they accused Trump of last year, and now they're trying to do it and get the glory away from Trump to say, well, it's us Democrats that hold a gun to Trump's head to make sure he negotiated with a gun to the North Koreans' head. This is pure fantasy and insanity on the part of the Democrats.
Well, it's insanity, and what they're saying is that they'll sabotage it in the Congress. By the way, the same people are saying that they'll vote against Trump's bill on the Chinese telecom company. So the people who claim to be for better relations around the world are sabotaging Trump's efforts to do precisely that. Now, what I point out in the article is that this one of the things Trump said is that he doesn't want to use the terminology of painful pressure on North Korea, maximum pressure. He said, we're not going to talk about that. So they said, why not? And he said, well, look, we're going to keep the sanctions, but we're now in a potentially friendly situation, so why go in and threaten them? So here you see Trump teaching something about diplomacy to people who claim Trump is an idiot when it comes to diplomacy.
He's a genius at it, isn't he?
Well, they're the
ones way beyond that. Way beyond
that. They failed repeatedly by intention. Look, these guys don't want any agreement.
They don't want peace.
In contrast, what did Putin say when he was asked about Trump? He said, it's a bold and mature decision. We're watching it closely. We hope it succeeds, and we'll do anything we can to help him.
Right.
So, and then, by the way, after all this from the Congress, and by the way, the Congress loves sanctions. These are the same people who 98-2 in the Senate voted for the Kotze bill, the sanctions against Russia.
Right, and it was bipartisan, by the way. It was Rhino Republicans and Democrats. It wasn't just the Democrats that did this.
Well, it was every Republican except one and every Democrat except one in the Senate. And there was only two Republicans and one Democrat.
What's the rationality of sanctions? Why do they think this is going to make things any better than aggravate and increase the pressure in Russia over the next decade
because
to
that's
prepare for World War III? They want World War III, these morons, don't they?
They do. And in this sense, you see Trump then goes to Canada, and what's the first thing he says? Why aren't the Russians part of the G8 anymore? It's silly to ignore them. They're a power. They should be here. And this that sent Trudeau and Macron through the roof.
I don't understand. This Canadian Prime Minister is a social moron. And so is Macron, trying to act like he's some kind of celebrity prime minister of, or president of France. Yeah, you know, and they had this bromance when he was here, only if he would kind of do what Macron wanted with Iran. And now, yeah, well, how does he maneuver himself when the Iranians say, hey, we're going to enrich uranium anyway, to hell with you Europeans, we're just going to do it. I mean, Macron looks like a moron, and so does Merkel. And the problem is, they're losing power. I mean, look at the number of protests against Macron and Merkel. It's
well,
crazy.
Let me make one other point on this Korea thing. While these guys in the Senate and the House are railing against Trump, while the media is attacking Trump, 56% of the American people want a deal with North Korea.
Of course.
According to a Washington Post ABC poll, 56%, only 30% said it's not a good idea.
I heard the number was higher, up to 60%. That's the number I heard this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's close. I mean, it's a lot of people, basically. Anybody who thinks about this says, hey, you want to have peace? Yeah, I don't want to die in my bed at night and sort of a nuclear flash or EMP blockout. Really? Oh, that's a good idea. How about that? It's like, do you want me to saw your legs off or do you want to have this ice cream? What do you want? Legs off or ice cream? So, Harley, you've got lots of things you want to expand upon. Please continue.
Yeah, the first point I wanted to make is that with the statement that Trump has made some mistakes and has some problems and has some bad people around him, nevertheless, his approach to North Korea is the right one. His approach to Russia is right. His approach to China is right. And the people who are opposing him, including the whole deep state from the Obama crew and the Bush crew, plus the Democrats and Republicans in the House and Senate, they're not just misguided. They have a different view. Their view is that the United States, meaning the banks, have to dictate policy to the world. And Trump's not going along with that. And we'll see what comes out of the summit in Canada. I think he's only going to be there for a few hours. But I wanted to go then to a second point here, where the question was posed by me to a leading Italian politician, a young man, Marco Zani, who is in the European Parliament, but he's also an advisor to the current government, to the Lega, which has the vice chancellor and the, you know, it's one of the two parties in the Italian government.
Right.
He laid out in the interview with me 2 points that are important. One, that the policies of the new government are no more austerity. We're going to have growth by investing in physical production. And
right.
How is Italy going to do that? Glass-Steagall, LaRouche's policy, national credit policy. They're not going to depend on the Brussels bureaucrats for money because the Brussels bureaucrats won't give it. And three, infrastructure spending. So that's the first point. Now, the second point, he was asked, well, what's the situation with the euro? And he said, it's not in our platform to leave the euro. It's in our platform to do what's good for the Italian people. And if the Brussels bureaucrats stand in the way of what's good for the Italian people, then they will force us to have a referendum on the euro. And he said, and I assure you, if that happens, Italy will be out of the EU. Now, he pointed out that the EU was not selling Italian bonds, the European Central Bank, to squeeze Italy. They're basically giving trillions of dollars or trillions of euros to the British banks, the German banks, the French banks, the Belgian banks, but nothing to Italy, nothing to Greece, nothing to Spain.
Really?
And so, yeah. And so what Marco said is that they're trying to punish us, to teach us a lesson. What's the lesson they want to teach us? Don't be democratic. Because what did the people vote for? They voted for jobs. They voted for growth. They voted for an end to austerity. They voted to end the EU dictate over Italian economic policy. And now they're being told that that's not acceptable. And he said, well, who's making that decision? Unelected bureaucrats. We're not going to go along with that. Now, the final point he made is change is possible. He said, I've been in this fight now for 10 years. He's a young man. He's in his mid-30s. But he said, I've been in Brussels, which is a cesspool. I've seen how things are controlled from the top. But I've also seen that when you present a policy directly on a regular, timely basis and clearly to people, they'll grasp it. They'll understand it. And that's how we won the election last time. And if Brussels tries to annul that election and have another election, we'll get more votes the next time.
Right.
And what he said is that the Italians are very happy because they think they have a potential friend in Donald Trump.
Right.
And so he was very upbeat. I'll be seeing him at the end of this month at a conference we have. But if people are interested in hearing the interview, and I think your listeners would be extremely excited to hear someone with a nice Italian accent telling you about how Italy is taking on the bankers, taking on the globalists, taking on those who are stealing their sovereignty, you can go on YouTube and just type in Hanging with Harley. It's my weekly show. And if you
Hanging with Harley. By the way, send me the link on that. Now, where's the show located?
Well, it's on YouTube, so I'll send you the link.
Send me the link on that. Yeah, that's excellent.
Yeah.
By the way, we can now do simulcast through live stream to Vimeo. That's live. And I can do it any time, so we can do it on the weekend at a time that's better because of the big time difference, or after the show, or even before the show in the morning. So we can do that now, and those things come up immediately. So if you have something urgent that needs to get news, even if it's just 5 or 10 minutes, we can pulse that up and have it instantly everywhere. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Patreon, Spreaker, etc. That's important because things are changing very rapidly, aren't they?
They are.
There's a lot of moving parts. It's moving rapidly. One thing I'm impressed with Trump, he doesn't mind dealing with multiple things. He can juggle like a good, what I call political busker, multiple things in the air and not be flustered, right? He just, and he knows how to negotiate and not get flustered over the fact that something does or doesn't happen right away. He'll just maneuver and pivot on it. And because he's not a politician, he doesn't take a kind of a hard and fast, he's very pragmatic. He'll try to keep on working around and working around until eventually he gets something that works. It may not be perfect, but it's going to work. Just like he got with health care, he's changed the thing on getting access to drugs for trial drugs for cancer or other things. He just changed the thing for veterans. And I think what's going to happen is you're going to see this with the trade deals. He's going to deal bilaterally with countries like China and Russia and so on. And everybody's going to walk away happy, as he said, like after the Canadians. He said, you know what, we're going to fix these things. If you want to say that they're all hurt by the fact that he's not capitulating, he said, look, when they have a 300% tariff against American dairy, we'll fix that, and then we'll all be back in love again, he said. I thought it was so funny. He's very realistic about this, isn't he?
And the important thing, to just go back to the Italian situation, is that the Italian voters a year ago were pretty much hopeless. They had a chaotic political situation. They had one caretaker regime after another, so-called technocrats, bankers, IMF officials.
Right.
And now they've made a breakthrough. Their new finance minister is pro-Glass-Steagall, and he wants to move Italy more directly in collaboration with China, not just for Italy, but for Africa. So Italian firms and Chinese firms can invest in Africa. Now, why? Because where are the refugees coming from that are coming into Italy? They're coming from poor, destroyed countries in North Africa.
Right, so stop the destruction of the countries, drill for primary water, oasis water, refurbish their economies, and they will want to leave their countries and head to Italy. That's a fix of the underlying problem. It's like if you've got a gangrenous limb, you got to fix it with antibiotics and so on, or you've got to cut it off. The better thing is to fix it and stop the infection.
The EU is accusing the Italians of being anti-immigrant because they're saying they have a plan to fix the problem. And Salvini, who's the vice prime minister, who's the leader of the League, the Lega Nord party, one of the two parties in the government, said that his first foreign trip will be to China. The second thing the Italians are going to do is work with the Austrians, and the Austrians will take over the EU presidency for the next 6 months,
right,
to progressively reduce the sanctions against Russia. And Putin just had an extraordinary trip to Vienna. The main reason was for the 50-year anniversary of Gazprom and the Austrian energy company. But Putin was greeted by all the political elites. Very successful trip. And again, the world is changing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Back in a moment with more amazing analysis and solutions to the world's problems. Back in a moment with Harley. One of the things that you've kind of repeatedly said, but now kind of tweaked in my mind, part of the reason why China can't really invest in the West is because of the bubble economy. What Italy is talking about is walling off with Glass-Steagall, which is what Trump needs to do, the private finances of people so the banks can use it for manipulating the bubble economy. If they can make more money by doing crooked deals behind the scenes rather than building infrastructure and jobs and actual manufacturing, they're going to continue doing it. And of course, the Chinese don't want to get sucked into that mess where you're dealing with countries like Italy that want to have Glass-Steagall. They can actually have credit for developing real industry and real production and real infrastructure, which is what the Chinese do. The Chinese in 2008-09, while we poured basically trillions of dollars into stupid expansion of existing banks, it's like growing a pig that's already market ready and doubling its size again while the small banks disappear. It's craziness, isn't it?
Well, the Chinese and the Russians made very clear when they were told after the fall of the Soviet Union, there is no alternative except free trade, anti-sovereign agreements that include financial agreements, and that there will only be a handful of big banks. And, of course, the Chinese banks became very large because of the free trade agreements and the original offshoring of U.S. jobs to China. So they became very big banks. And some of them were very interested in getting involved in derivatives and swaps and various other kinds of financial innovation. And the Chinese government at a certain point looked at this and they said, no, you're not going to do that. We're not going to take these hard-earned assets and put them into a giant casino. And when some of the bankers insisted that this is the way to expand the credit base of the population with credit cards and lending, the Chinese government briefly went along with it and then shut it down. And the Western, the European Union, the U.S. Treasury Department, and during the Bush period, and especially under Obama, accused the Chinese of not having free banking, not having an open banking system. And the Chinese said, we don't want your banking system. Your banking system just failed in 2008, and it's going to fail again. Meanwhile, what has China done? They've lifted 800 million people out of poverty, while Obama put another 10 million people into poverty in the United States. So, you know, you have contrasting systems. Now, what the Italians are saying is that the Chinese are right. They're going to learn from the Chinese. And the Chinese have a kind of Glass-Steagall. They don't allow their investment banks in Hong Kong and Shanghai to have depositors. They have to operate with the investors' own cash. In other words, you can't use other people's money to speculate.
Yeah, yeah. OPM, we call it.
Yeah. So what the Chinese...
That's terrible what they do. They use our money in the banks to speculate, then they blow up their debt to the ceiling, then they ask for more money to cover the debts they've created on gambling.
Well, and when they speculate and lose, you lose the money,
right?
The bank gets bailed out.
Oh, yeah, and the bailouts just go on and on and on. And this is the formula for complete collapse of the banking system. And, of course, if it happens, millions will die. I remember one of the comments is for every 1% increase in unemployment and interest rates going up, let's say 1% unemployment, I think the number was like 20,000 people die in the United States. They actually had a financial calculation to convert it to the number of people dead.
Well, it's actually accelerating. The death rate is accelerating because of the hopelessness. But let me just finish the point on China.
Right.
Chinese and the Russians were basically told by the IMF that in order to remain in the SWIFT clearance system, in order to remain in the markets, you have to open up your banking systems. Putin sent them a very clear message. He said, why would I eat someone else's spoiled food? All it would do is indigestion. We're not going to do it.
Right.
And he said, we did it under the Yeltsin period, and no money flowed into Russia. It all flowed out.
Right.
And what the Chinese said is, well, thank you for the offer, but we have a different approach to banking because our concern is with the people. The new Italian government said that we are not concerned about the banks in Brussels unless they impinge on what we're trying to do. Our constituency is the people of Italy, and we're going to raise their wages, we're going to raise the retirement wages, we're going to upgrade the health system, and we're going to build infrastructure. And when the EU said, but if you do that, you'll be violating the Maastricht Agreement, which is the key agreement of the EU, which doesn't allow governments to do any deficit spending. And the Italians said, look what damage has been done by sticking to that, because you don't distinguish between debt that's taken on for something that will increase productivity in the future and therefore wipe out the debt versus debt which is used to pay off debt. Those are two completely different conceptions. The American system of Hamilton is that you never take on a debt without the means to extinguish it. How do you extinguish a debt? You produce more than you consume. That's the American system. And that's what the Chinese are doing, and that's what the Italians want.
Right. Which is really, it's a good sign. It's not just populism. It's a whole formula of populism, representation, rational banking, infrastructure, negotiations over trade rather than war. And again, remember, it's the things that happened before World War II and even the attack in Pearl Harbor was we actually had a blockade of the Japanese for coal and oil and steel. And it's not surprising that they responded in a very vile way, but the fact is, when you don't negotiate, you eventually have to have conflict.
Well, and the very term populism is used as a sort of a simile for racism and xenophobia. And, you know, I think the term populism is not exactly the right term. I think it's much more sovereign republic. People who believe that a nation is established for the interests of its people. And
Right. The
people have a right, a democratic right, to vote, to protest, to object to the government policy. But the purpose of the government is to do what's necessary to improve the conditions for the people. And when you have governments that are elected to do that and come up with a policy that goes against the orthodoxy of the powers that be, what gives those powers, those bankers in London and in Brussels, the right to dictate to the Italian government what they should do for their people?
Right.
That's the issue in Italy.
And well, I want to mention something you're probably aware of. You heard about this Dutch banker insider, Ronald Bernard, turned as a whistleblower of the globalists. You've heard about that story?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And basically, they threatened him, and he had to pay back a whole lot of money, but they threatened him that if he released the names, they were going to kill him and all of his bloodline and all of his relatives. So what's going on here is the globalists are panicking. They know that their deep state, not just in America, but worldwide, is failing now. They know that the system is changing in every way, and humanity has been given a second chance. The second chance of stopping nuclear proliferation and starting collaboration to stabilize world economies, so we won't have a crash-and-burn world situation or the decay from bad trade to bad war. And that's why seeing things like Glass-Steagall, these are the structural things that need to happen so that banks can rationally, you know, people can save money, we can build infrastructure, and we can stabilize the ecosphere. But it's going to require people like Trump and like these new leaders in Italy and people with vision like Lyndon LaRouche and yourself to think it's better to plan a real Hamiltonian-type economy and rebuild things and stabilize the ecosphere by having rational economies that are sane and not crazy like the carbon credit stuff that the United Nations is pushing, and to reduce pollution so we can actually stop the drop in oxygen concentration, stop the poisoning of the oceans with plastic and pollution. All of it makes sense. It's just it's great to see there's more than just Trump. There's leaders around the world that are starting to grasp this intensity of solutions to a satanic cult driving us over the edge to, like lemmings, to mass casualties. It's amazing.
Well, people should listen to the interview that I did. I'll send the link.
Send me the link. I'll have it posted up today in today's shows. We should do some live interviews, too. And
this is Dan.
Side effects of continuing to have sanctions on Russia, and I was just reading this in one of my news reports, Russia's doubling down on their warhead mounted on missiles. And the fact is, a side effect of having an ongoing negative dialogue with Russia, not including them in trade talks, like the G8, and still having sanctions against them, is increasing the chances that Russia will be militarized, and then if something incongruous happens, we're going to have a great big thermonuclear exchange. And what you're saying is the solutions to this is not just inspections, it's having a humane attitude toward other countries of different cultures that don't have to necessarily be democratic.
Right. Yeah, that's what Mrs. LaRouche calls the new paradigm.
Right.
That we shift from the idea that it's a zero-sum game and for me to win, you have to lose, into a win-win situation. But let me tell you something that happened the other day that's really exciting. U.S. Ambassador to Russia, John Huntsman, went to Baikonur, which is the launch place of the Russian rockets into space. And there was an American...
You're talking about the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, right?
Yeah. And a Russian, an American, and a German astronaut were launched to join the crew at the International Space Station.
Right.
And the German who was there, I believe his name is Gauss,
right.
He gave an interview in Germany a week before, and he was asked, is there any tension between you and the Russians at the space station? And he laughed, and he said, we're scientists, we're military people, we have a mission, it's a joint mission, there's no reason for us to have conflict. Maybe we might have conflict if we were trying to decide which television show we were going to watch at night. But luckily, no television up there.
Yeah, that's funny. Very good, sort of logical, sensible answer. I mean, we see this in the West even with media. They try to radicalize opinions so that you have to be uber radical if you're on the left or right, or also a lot of these even rightist people that I'm concerned about, like, for example, John Lightning Bolton, I call him. You know, he should be in spandex with a big, you know, lightning bolt on his front chest and, spandex outfit, because he's concerning to me. But I think, honestly, Trump is going to keep his hand on all these people, and they're not going to have their way, just like when McMaster tried to push her.
Well, here's an interesting thing on Bolton. Kim Young Chol, who was the former spy agency head in North Korea, when he was sent as Kim's envoy to meet with Trump,
right.
Bolton was not in the room. When they had the
meeting
afterwards of the U.S.-Korea hands to assess what happened at the meeting, Bolton was not in the room. So I think the point here is that Trump may defend Bolton when the North Koreans attack him, but that doesn't mean he's going to listen to Bolton. And I think Bolton's mission, by the way, was to find the leaker in the National Security Agency. That was why he was brought in, not to shape policy. And,
right.
And I think that people misunderstand that, because the idea is that this is a wild maniac, which is true, and that he's going to run Trump's policy.
He's got a narrow scope, in other words, of duties there, is what you're saying.
Yeah. And the main point is that Trump is the one who makes the decisions. Now, he can make bad decisions. He has made some bad decisions so far.
But we're trying to get direct contact to Trump to deal with things, because I think he's blind. He's got blind spots in his negotiations with North Korea and Iran and with China. I mean, it's good that they're going to rescue ZTE, but they need to go well beyond that to stabilize the situation, the same way with Iran and North Korea. They don't want to have blind people popping their opinions out like Pence and Pompeo talking about the Libyan deal. It scares the hell out of the North Koreans and the generals. You want something that's more humane and reasonable and something that's doable, right?
Well, you know, again, Bill, I think you're missing what's happening with China, and it's really interesting. Because right. On the one side, you get it because of what you say about Jack Ma and the Xi Jinping.
Oh, yeah, Trump, I get that.
But what Trump is doing now and what the Chinese are doing, the Chinese just said, well, all right, we'll take $100 billion worth of American automobiles. We could use them. So the Chinese are leveraging their financial strength to work in ways to reduce the deficit. At the same time, what are they saying? The trade deficit is partly related to the fact that you're not producing things that the Chinese want. So you've got to gear up your industry. We'd right. like to help you do that. We right. can do it in two ways. One is joint China-U.S. efforts to invest in third countries as part of the new Silk Road. And secondly, for China to work with U.S. companies building infrastructure in the United States. Trump wants to do both of those. So
I think that's going to happen, too. I really see it happening, too.
It has to happen, because we're not very good at infrastructure anymore.
Yeah, part of it is because of the number of people they train in the industry and also tech. I mean, if you want to assemble a factory with 5,000 workers to assembly microchips or technical equipment, they have all the people trained there. In 90 days, you can actually get approvals and do it in China. It'll take you years, if not decades.
Let me give you an example. At the Atlanta airport, a truck backed up, a baggage truck backed up into an alternate power generator and knocked out power at the airport for 11 hours. What was this, about 3 months ago? They couldn't get the busiest airport in the world, didn't have a backup generator. It wasn't the backup generator, it was the main generator. They didn't have a backup generator that could do it.
Right.
So, you know, the point is that there are multiple levels that are at work here, including on the one hand Trump threatening to add more in tariffs to China, things of that sort. At the same time, the Chinese are saying, okay, we'll buy more sorghum, we'll buy more soybeans, we'll do that. But we also will not submit to a Western-style financial system. And Trump is saying, okay, and Mnuchin is saying, no, we've got to have American banking methods in China. And at some point, this is going to come to a head because Mnuchin is still representing Goldman Sachs and not representing the best interests of the American people.
Right.
And he's the Treasury Secretary.
It's got a good name, Gold Sachs. They're only interested in Gold Sachs, not people or nation states or even preventing war.
Well, remember, the previous guy from there was Robert Rubin. And you have... and then Hank Paulson, who was the Treasury Secretary when the crash hit in 2008, and what did he do? Bailed out the banks. So, you know, as long as you have these bankers in these positions of influence, there's going to be a problem. Now, I'm hoping that Trump is able to sit down with Xi Jinping. It looks like he's going to have a summit with Putin, and that'll be very important. And the Italians have invited him to come to Rome, so they can explain to him what they're doing to differentiate the policies of the new Italian government from the policies of Brussels. If Trump did that, those three meetings plus the meeting with Kim Jong-un, you're talking about a potential awakening in the United States at the top level that could be the kind of changes that many of us have been wanting to see for years. Lyndon LaRouche is extremely excited by the potential now to make these changes because this is what he's devoted his whole life to, and he's been consistent in this. And what we're seeing is that in his own way, Trump is following a game plan that's very close to some of the key points of LaRouche's policies.
Yeah, in other words, the formula may start to actually be implemented that LaRouche has talked about for decades.
Yeah, and what's the shorthand language for it? Physical economy. Invest in production at the front end of new technologies, in research and development, in job training, and make sure there's ample credit through local banks and through community banks to those entrepreneurs and those businessmen and those industrialists who want to build physical equipment, new plant and equipment.
And we need better help for the small business or the inventors. And usually our guys in a garage or a small business that's starting to develop the technology that later gets appropriated by other people, right?
Well, that's certainly one side of it. The other side of it is there are some corporations that do have good research and development, but under the post-1990 banking rules, they squeeze out the money from research and development and use it for mergers and acquisitions.
Right.
The first thing when there's a merger and acquisition is the company that's taken over has its research and development shut down.
Right.
Because that's a source of cash for the people who took over the company for the sake of making money, not
right.
for improving the company.
Or making more production, or improving the lives of people,
yeah.
or getting better wages and jobs, etc. You know,
yeah.
like right across America, we should have fiber optic, clean power, and non-distributed. We should harden our power grid against coronal mass ejections. We should have proper border control, rapid and industry responsive immigration policies. All these things are on Trump's agenda, and Glass-Steagall's right at the top of the list, aren't they?
It's a very confusing thing for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love. NutraMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutritious meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutraMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com. NutraMedical.com for the whole family.